Welcome to the Church Planting Podcast. It's great to have you with us today. This podcast features inspirational insights of church planting practitioners from across North America, and it's brought to you by the Church Planting Group of the North American Mission Board. We want to invite you to visit our website at www.churchplantingvillage.net to discover a host of world-class resources that have been developed for both church planters and those who lead them. Now get ready, because the conversation is about to begin.
We're going to talk a little bit today about how to start and stay growing as a new church, or as any church. A problem that's been identified by numerous people that I've seen, and the problem is this, and it's a significant one if you think about it. The problem being that churches tend to grow to the capabilities of their senior pastor. I heard Doug Murin describing this fact that there's a problem that churches tend to grow to the level of skill, the level of ability of their senior pastor. And in any church, any pastor, they would tell you that their church grew to a stage at some point along the way when their skills as a pastor were challenged. And they were faced with kind of a wall where they had to move on to develop some other skills that would allow them to grow larger than they were. And I think this is a very common thing that we find in all churches, is that really the crux of our church growth is dependent on our ability to be a growing leader, staying ahead of our church. Has anyone read a book by Bill Hull? It's called The Disciple-Making Pastor. Okay, good. Interesting book. I think that I agree with a great deal of what he has to say. There's a couple things that I have some challenges with. There's one that tends to be kind of controversial subject, I think, and Irwin touched on it last night. Bill Hull holds the opinion that only 5% of church leaders, church pastors, have the abilities to lead a church of 350 or better. And I think that statement is fraught with a lot of questions and a lot of implications. We have to ask ourselves, kind of like what Irwin does last night, are leaders made or are leaders born? Because if only 5% of people have the ability to lead, give leadership in a church of 350 or better, then what does that say for all of us who aren't in that 5%? That's a real hard question, huh? And that's part of what I want us to talk about today, a little bit about what it means to be a growing leader, some of the implications. We're going to talk about that to a little greater extent in just a minute. Now, here's a fact. The fact is, the intensity of our personal and spiritual growth will directly impact our church's health. Now, you probably recognize, as I do, the incredible weight of that statement, that whether we're senior pastor or whether we're a staff member or whether we're a lay leader, that our spiritual health and vibrancy is going to directly affect the health and the growth of our church. And so that's an enormous responsibility on us as leaders. And I think that's a part of what James talks about in his book, that not many should presume to be teachers, because of the enormous responsibility on us to be growing, vibrant, and developing leaders. Now, I know all of you desire that and want that, or you wouldn't be at this conference this week. And I hope that you don't see me as a person who is standing in front of you saying, I've got all the answers. You know, I'm a perfect leader. What I am, I believe, and what I strive to be is a growing leader. And I know that you'll also want to be a growing leader. I heard or read an illustration once about Muhammad Gandhi. Is that the way you say his name? Mahatma Gandhi. Thank you. He was talking about this man who was running behind this big crowd of people, and he was all out of breath. And a guy stopped him. He said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh man, I'm chasing those people. I can't fall back on their leader." And and really, that illustrates the truth a lot, that as leaders, sometimes we find ourselves having to really push to stay ahead of our people. And certainly if we're in a growing church situation, we'll feel that often. And it's a great need for leaders to be constantly growing, constantly improving their skills, and staying ahead of the flock. Okay, so let's talk about a few ways that leaders can grow. There's a price for growth, as in Luke chapter 14, verse 28. Jesus talks about the man who was striving to build a structure, and he got partway through and figured out that he didn't have enough to build it. And you can imagine that everyone was kind of laughing, jeering at him, because it was kind of a stupid mistake. And as leaders, there are costs involved in being a great leader, in being a dynamic leader, a leader that God uses. And we should really sit down and calculate what that cost is and whether we want to pay the price. And if we don't, then that's okay. If we do, then we just recognize it and we set out in the right path. So we're going to talk about some of the leader's price for growth. Number one, if we want to be in a growing situation, understanding that a growing church is dependent on having a growing leader, then we first of all need to assume responsibility for growth. We have to assume responsibility for growth. There's only one person who can ensure that I'll be a growing leader, and that's me. No one can do that for me. I'm the one that has to take charge of that area of my life. I think often about people like Bill Hybels and Rick Warren and successful places. What takes a growing leader? And there's lots of factors involved in it. And if you really kind of condense it down, there's three factors to a church that really is able to grow. I think one is be in the right place. You look at someone like Rick Warren, and you discover, man, this guy, he was in the right place. He was in South Orange County, which at the time was the fastest growing county in the nation. And it was booming with people. If you've ever been to his area, you can go anywhere within miles of there, see people getting out of cars, and they all look exactly the same. They drive the same kind of cars. And they dress the same, same age. And he's in a wonderful location with a homogeneous people that just makes a huge target population. He's in the right place. It was at the right time. If you go to South Orange County today, it's not the booming, thriving place that it was when Rick Warren went there in 1981. Still a good place, but it's not the thriving, incredibly expanding place. So Rick Warren was someone who was in the right place, the right time. And yet he was also the right person. He was a dynamic, growing leader. And all three of those factors are important to be in a growing setting. And if you were to take any two of those, for instance, if you had the right place, the right time, but you had the wrong person, you wouldn't have the same thing happen. And you see, what we're really getting at here is the crux is being all three of those things coming together. And in our situation, we'll want to evaluate, how does, when we come to saying, am I a success or not? We want to look at all of those factors. Is my place a growing place? Is this the right time? And am I the right place? Am I the right person? Now, in that, we use that for a couple reasons. Number one is to recognize that the sovereignty of God is in large part a part of church growth. God putting the right person in the right place at the right time. And it also can be encouraging to know I don't have to compare myself with Rick Warren or Bill Hybels, because I'm in Sacramento, and it's a much different place. It's a different time. But really, all of that discussion is simply to say that of those three factors, right person, right place, right time, the most crucial is that we are a growing leader, the right person, that even kind of a so-so place in so-so time with the right person has more opportunity for God doing great things than the wrong person, a non-growing person, a non-growing leader in the right place at the right time. Is that making sense? And the only reason I talk about that is just, and we could talk about a lot of factors there, is just to illustrate how vital and significant it is that we are a growing person. It's crucial to being a growing church. And really, we're responsible for assuming the price of growth. Peter Wagner, John Maxwell, Warren Bennis, all of these are men who talk about the fact that we have a leadership crisis in America right now. That the need in every area of business, church, in every area is that there would be leaders who would rise to the occasion to take on the challenges of the 90s. It's a major, major need. Let's get back for a second to this 5% and try to answer that question a little bit. Are only 5% of people gifted and able to lead a church of 350 plus? Well, what do you guys think about that? Talk to me. Okay, that's a good question. It may be accurate to look and say that 5%. There are 200,000 churches in America. Only 5% of them have 350 plus attendance. So the question is, does that mean that only 5% of pastors are able to lead a church 350 plus? Or does that mean that only 5% of leaders have developed themselves to the point of being leaders in churches of 350 or plus? Well, let me tell you why. I'm not sure that I agree that there are only 5% of people capable of leading a church 350 or plus. Number one, I believe that that's man-centered thinking as opposed to God-centered thinking. I think that's looking at leadership all wrong. I think that that's saying that leadership is a set of skills and abilities, a charisma that we're born with, and it doesn't enter God into the equation at all. A great book, if you've not read it, is Spiritual Leadership by J. Oswald Sanders. He says there that leadership is often viewed as the product of natural endowments and traits of personality. For instance, intellectual capacity, force of will, enthusiasm. That such talents and scholastic attainments do greatly enhance leadership is beyond question. But those are not the factors of paramount importance in spiritual leadership. The real qualities of leadership are to be found in those who are willing to suffer for the sake of objectives great enough to demand their wholehearted obedience. He says, spiritual leaders are not made by election or appointment by men or any combination of men, nor by conferences or synods. Only God can make leaders. See, that's my conviction, that God, in his sovereignty, can make leaders out of anyone, notwithstanding their natural talents and their abilities. And while those certainly aid leadership, there's a sovereignty of God in leadership that I think is important that we remember. And that really leads to the second point, that God shows his strength in weakness. And of that, there's no question. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 10, it says that straight out, that God loves to demonstrate his power in weakness. And I think if we're to sit down heart to heart with the Bill Hybels and the Rick Warrens and the Doug Murins and the Leith Andersons, that we'll discover that God has helped form and shape their skills and their abilities as they've become growing leaders committed to great visions in great situations. So for me, I at least am encouraged in the fact that that I can take responsibility to be a growing leader. And in large part, it's my decision to say, I am going to be developing and growing as a leader, putting skills into my life that are going to help me move to the next level. And really it comes down to the first point, that I have to assume responsibility to be a growing leader. And I have to at least start with the question in my church, am I the growing leader that's going to allow my church to be a growing church? Okay, so that is the basis. Let's talk on point two. Dwayne Davis, by the way, says, if called upon to name the key to church growth, it would be leadership. And that's pretty common among all writers. Okay, second point, leader's price for growth, is that we must commit ourselves to God's vision. We must commit ourselves to God's vision. Now, I want to just kind of rush over some of this that we're hearing about a lot this week. And this is one, everyone's talking about the necessity of vision and purpose. And the first thing related to that we have to do is find it. What is God's vision for me in my setting? And we need to sit down and make sure that we know what it is that God wants for me in my situation. If I'm the senior pastor or staff member or lay pastor, what does God... the senior pastor, of course, finds the vision for the church. And we have to sit down with God and discover what that is. And then as staff or lay leader, commit that we like the vision in this place, and we're willing to commit our lives to seeing it happen where we are. So first thing we have to do is find it. Second thing that we need to do is cling to it. We need to find it. Secondly, we need to cling to it. If you haven't discovered, what you'll find in church situations is that people will stream through your church who will want to lead you away from your original vision. In our church, we had a very clear understanding of what we wanted to happen as far as vision. We were a church targeted towards reaching non-church baby boomers in our suburban area of Sacramento. And our style was going to be seeker-sensitive. And we had a certain style of music that we wanted. We had a certain style of our service that we wanted, which didn't include having people being recognized in the service, a variety of things like that. And within a few weeks of our first service, we had people who were wanting to meet with me, had me over for dinner, talking about churches they had been in, Vineyard Fellowships or Calvary Chapels, that were really wanting us to say, I've got some music that'd be really great, but it didn't fit our style. Or, what if we did this in the service? Had people, I'd love to be able to have prayer requests in the service and things like that. And it's very important that we know what God's vision for us is in our setting, and that we're willing to cling to it and stick with it. And what that will mean is that there will be people in your church setting who will leave. And one interesting factor in growing churches is that, and John Vaughn talks about this in his church Mega Growth, he says that growing churches are not afraid to see people leave. Not afraid to see people leave. As a matter of fact, they send them off with blessing, not feeling angry or bad about it at all, because they understand that the vision they give them, God's given them, is not going to be for everyone. Everyone's not going to fit there. And one of the things, especially in small churches, it gets real tough. I mean, you get someone who's a good leader, quality person, and you hate to see them go. And man, you need people so bad that the thought of a Sunday school teacher or a tither leaving, it can cause a lot of stress. But we have to trust the vision that God has given us, and we have to find it, and we have to stick with it, knowing that God has the people that we need to make it happen. And that's just very important, because when we start just shifting a little bit with our vision in order to make people happy, we set up all kinds of problems for the future. And so we need to find God's vision, be convinced of it, know it, and be willing to stick with it. Okay? Commit yourself to God's vision, find it, cling to it. And the third point is work hard. I mean, I thought I was going to be real unique with this when I got here. But this has just been a real theme this week, hard work. I had been hearing a lot about stories of pastors who had worked themselves to death and had this depression and were really recommending, you know, back off, time to your family, stuff like that. And while all that's great, I think it presents some challenges. This book called The Rescuing Ministry from the Success Syndrome, something like that. The author says this: some time ago, Barbara, my wife, and I spent a fascinating evening with a young pastor and his wife who had recently begun working in their first pastorate. After dinner, we discussed how faithfulness not only demands obedience to God's word, but hard work. With little thought of it until several weeks later, we received the following letter. Our pastor friend wrote, "I feel compelled to make the following comments. Most of what I say is both to my surprise and chagrin. It seems that in trying to correct some possible pastoral abuses of the past, seminaries are exposing their students to a recurring theme. Don't burn out. Be sure to get your days off. Marriage first, ministry second. These refrains may be quite true, but they come with such repetitive force that I fear that the pendulum has swung from those who jeopardize their families in the name of ministry to those who ministry has become... those who say that ministry owes them something. I say this from my own experience. After my first 6 months of ministry, I was shocked to discover that my biggest danger was not burning out, but resting out. I was lazy. I assumed that I was putting in my 40 hours plus hours, but being careful to guard my time off. But when I added up my hours, I was short of 40. How could this be true of, quote, hardworking Jonathan?" And we've heard over and over this week that hard work is going to be one of the cost factors for being a growing leader. That growing churches simply demand hard work. And there's really no way to get around that. I never have a 40-hour week. You know, I'm usually more around 60 hours. And whether, I'm not recommending that, but for me, there's no way for me to do everything that goes on in our church in less time than that. I remember when I was in seminary, I had a practicum with Joel Gregory, and they were saying that all of their primary staff in their church worked 60, 70-hour weeks. And they saw that as just the norm for being a growing church. Now, somehow, we have to be able to find a balance. We have to be able to find a balance between keeping our families intact, having the hard work that's necessary, it's going to be required if our church is to grow. And we have to somehow strike a balance that works there, that's able to do both. But there's no question about it that working hard is a tremendously important part of being a growing leader. There's a fourth factor in price for growth, that's cultivate your leadership edge. Cultivate your leadership edge. How do you know if you're a leader? Go ahead. Turn around and look and see if anybody's following. That's how you know if you're a leader. People follow someone that knows where they're going. Leaders give pace. Leaders give energy. I want to talk a little bit about a leadership edge. What does that mean, a leadership edge? A leader, we need to understand, is someone who does the right things, as opposed to someone who does things right. And our leadership edge is developing the ability to do the things that make us a leader. Okay, and let's talk a little bit about what that is. Number one, we need to understand that leadership leads. Leadership gives pace and energy to the organization. Leadership gives direction. Leadership is when we become someone that people are following. Warren Bennis calls it the Willenda factor. He says there was a family of aerialists. You may have heard of them, the Willendas, in the 70s. And a Carl Willenda was in his 70s and was walking across channels and between buildings. And it was incredible this incredible tightrope walker. In San Juan, Puerto Rico, he was walking between two buildings in 1977, and he fell to his death. Warren Bennis did some interviews with the wife and found out that she said something interesting happened, that for the first time in his life, when they went to San Juan, Puerto Rico, he was more concerned with falling than he was with walking on the tightrope. That for the first time in his life, he'd been doing this for decades, for the first time in his life, he personally supervised the attachment of the guide wires on the buildings. And for whatever reason, his attention was focused on falling rather than walking, and he did. And for leaders, I think there's an incredibly important lesson that we learn there, and that is that leadership leads, and we're focused on headed in the direction that we're wanting people to go. And it's very easy as leaders to get sidetracked in things that aren't leadership, becoming managers, doing things right as opposed to doing the right thing. And we need to always keep in mind the fact that leadership leads. There's a second factor in our leadership edge, and that is that leadership conceptualizes. Leadership conceptualizes. Warren Bennis, in his book, Why Leaders Can't Lead. Has anyone read that book? Yeah, it's a great book. Warren Bennis says, the law of academic pseudodynamics says that routine work drives out non-routine work and smothers to death all creative planning, all fundamental change in any institution. We need to always remember that a leader is someone who spends time conceptualizing, dreaming, planning, visioning. And we need to be committed to make that an important priority in our scheduling. And it's incredibly easy to begin getting really busy, being what my professor used to call a busy butt. Busy butt, doing the wrong things. And we have to, and this is something that's such a challenge, we have to keep it at the front of our mind all the time, that leadership conceptualizes. And sometimes I can even feel guilty because I'm not doing something, you know, making calls, doing something, going somewhere. Until I just sit down and remember that a part of what I have to do is to dream, envision, and think.
Thanks so much for choosing to listen to the Church Planting Podcast. You can listen to additional podcasts or sign up to receive the weekly edition by logging on to nam.net/CPG podcast. That URL once again is namb.net/CPG podcast. We also want to remind you to discover thousands of resources that are available to church planters and church planting leaders at our website, www.churchplantingvillage.net. While you're there, sign up to receive our e-magazine, The Planter's Update. It's filled with practical tools that can help you in your planting journey. You can receive it today by logging on to www.churchplantingvillage.net/update. Reaching America, Canada, and beyond, this is your Church Planting Podcast. Thanks again for listening.